Hi, I'm Mel Majoros. I am a 7-year cancer survivor. My blog, The Cancer Warrior, is one of the top 10 breast cancer blogs, according to blogs.com. I'm here to bring a fresh, upbeat perspective to a topic that to some may seem scary. A positive mental attitude got me through my cancer, and I hope to share that with you. John Novak from Team Inspire. I had talked to him the other day, and I'm like, look, you know what? I've had a busy couple weeks. I need some help finding guests. And he put me in touch with Linnea Duff, who's a lung cancer survivor. She's my guest on today's show. How are you today, Linnea?
I'm great, thanks.
Now, I did pronounce your name correctly. I didn't even ask you that before the show. That's terrible of me.
No, yeah, that was correct.
Okay, well, you are a lung cancer. Actually, you have advanced lung cancer. Why don't you take us through how you found out you had cancer, and we'll go from there.
Sure. I was diagnosed with non-small cell lung cancer in April of 2005. And I had been previously diagnosed with adult onset asthma because, unlike a lot of patients who are diagnosed with lung cancer, I actually was symptomatic. I had shortness of breath. I had a cough. I just felt sick a lot. I felt very strongly that something was wrong with me, more than asthma, but as somebody who was young and a never smoker, my doctor never discussed the possibility of lung cancer with me, and I had no idea that it was something that was a possibility. So it wasn't until I got a case of pneumonia that wouldn't respond to antibiotics that I was given a chest x-ray and then a CAT scan, and it was shown that there was a pretty sizable mass in my left lung.
Wow. Now, did you go to the same doctor diagnose you with lung cancer, or did you go to somebody else?
No, it was my family physician, and actually it was a practice where it was sort of you rotated through physicians depending on who was available. And I can say that in the month prior to my diagnosis, I saw all four physicians in that practice because I kept coming back. I was just getting sicker and sicker. And the day that I had the scan, I had been on antibiotics for 3 weeks. And my husband did come in with me to that appointment. And when they came back after reviewing the scan, they said, well, you know, it looks like this is either a very recalcitrant pneumonia, a fungal infection of some sort, or a neoplasm. And I remember my husband's face sort of fell, but I honestly didn't even know what the word neoplasm meant.
Yeah, what is
that? So it wasn't until the doctor left the room that he explained to me and I understood that cancer was a possibility.
Wow. Yeah. Who just says neoplasm and be like, all right, well, I'll give you two time to discuss that. That sounds like, I mean, obviously, I don't know, but that sounds like something, if your doctor leaves your room, it's just something benign.
Yeah.
Or you would assume.
Well, you know, everybody was getting a lot more serious. I had been a pretty frequent patient to not only a general practitioner, but I was seeing a neurologist. I had seen a lot of different doctors because part of my presentation included weakness in my upper body, and I think it probably was an effect of the tumor and the hormones, and right now I'm completely blanking on what the term is for that, but initially they had thought maybe I was developing MS.
Oh.
And finally the neurologist said to me one day, well, what do you think is wrong with you? And I said, I have no idea. And at that point, he suggested I might be a hypochondriac.
What?
And yes.
Oh,
and I think it was a very frustrating time in my life where I knew that something was wrong with me, but I didn't know what.
Right.
And I think that my persistence, if anything, made people more frustrated with me because it felt in a way almost like I had no credibility.
Because you were young at the time.
Yep. And, you know, the never smoking status is important in telling my story simply because it really contributed to a delayed diagnosis. You know, had I been a smoker, I think people would have ordered a CAT scan a lot sooner.
Well, and I think a lot, you know, now people are ordering x-rays and CAT scans a lot sooner. I mean, you know, with your advocacy and I also my advocacy, it's not just smokers who get lung cancer. I mean,
and this was 10 years ago and things have changed a lot.
Exactly. There's still that thing. I'm sure people have asked you, oh, you have lung cancer. Have you smoked? It's like, well, what difference does that make if you did or you didn't? You know, there's still that stigma attached to it that you're, I know as an advocate, you're trying to get rid of, but telling a patient they're a hypochondriac, did you just want to just smack that doctor across the face and be like, what?
Well, I did contact him as soon as I got my diagnosis, left a message at the office, and boy, did he get back to me faster than he ever had, because I think he was thinking lawsuit, and that's not at all why I contacted him.
Right.
I just wanted him to know that this is ultimately what I had been diagnosed with and that it was something he needed to consider in the future. But I think if you're, I tend to think there's a little bit of bias against women that is historical,
yes.
Particularly if you are persistent and if you go in there and are honest about your fears. You know, and I think it goes back to when women were often diagnosed with hysteria.
Right.
You know, and this is sort of the modern version of that.
And back in the day, I mean, you know, I was at a local, it was a reformed mental hospital. They would put women in there when they had their period or menopause.
Yeah.
You
talk
know?
About crazy, huh?
I know, right? Exactly. So, I mean, you know, going and that's good that you didn't think lawsuit because, you know, the last thing that a doctor wants is to worry about that. But you also want, well, the next person who has a persistent cough, you don't want them to think,
right.
Oh, well, they're just, you know, maybe it's just allergies or whatever. It's like, no, just, you know, I'm always of the mindset of, I mean, I'm against like a lot of tests, but if you think that a CAT scan is necessary, if you think it as a patient and your doctor doesn't, then you should find a doctor who does, you know, rule everything
and
out before you just say, oh, well, it's probably not that because you have no idea. And neither do they without the proper charts or medical information.
And back then, I really didn't know that asking for a CAT scan was something I should have done.
Right.
And by the way, I thought of what I can think of a few moments
yes.
ago. It's paraneoplastic syndrome, where a tumor can actually secrete hormones and such that you do end up with some pretty bizarre symptoms. Mm. And, you know, after the fact, it was nothing that could be shown diagnostically, but in discussing it with my original oncologist, he said it was certainly possible. And I know that as soon as I had my surgery to remove the tumor, the weakness in my upper body abated.
Hmm. Oh, that's good. Did they remove any of your lung?
They did. They removed the lower lobe of my left lung. And this happened a week after my diagnosis. And my education was so very sudden because I didn't know that people could live with only one lung. And I do have my upper lobe still in my left lung, but that's a very small lobe.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you know, it's amazing how a body can adapt. And it was a grueling surgery because this was before they had VATS. And so it was the traditional spread your ribs, and they removed part of my ribs for biopsy, too.
So wait, and what do they do now?
They actually spread my ribs and went in through the back, and I have a very large incision.
Oh.
And they removed, I think it was 22 lymph nodes prior to the surgery, and it had been explained to me ahead of time that should any of the lymph nodes tested positive for cancer, they would have stopped the surgery.
Oh.
So when I awakened, that was my first question. Was it a long surgery?
And was it? Yes.
It was. So, you know, and that's what I wanted.
Yes.
You know, it's the fact that surgery was even an option. And certainly as my journey has continued, the word option is huge in my life.
Oh,
I equate option with hope.
Mm-hmm.
At diagnosis, my first important option was whether or not surgery was a possibility.
Right. you were diagnosed with stage 1B lung cancer. That's correct?
Yes.
Okay, yep. So a lot of people are automatically diagnosed, not automatically, but diagnosed as stage 4 because they're not as persistent as you were.
Well, and you know what? It's a question that I have, and I wonder about the whole surgery thing, too, because since I was diagnosed, not only the histology, the name for my cancer has changed, but so has the staging.
Oh.
And my cancer, my original tumor, it was quite large. It was 5 centimeters.
Mm.
And I have been told that were I diagnosed today, it would not have been a 1B. It would have been a 2-something.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very possible that surgery might not have been considered. And you probably are aware of Emily Bennett Taylor, who was diagnosed at 4, a young woman, and she convinced them to perform surgery.
Oh,
and she's
oh.
still alive because of it. And in my case, had I not had surgery, there were not other viable treatment options back then.
Hmm.
I ended up having adjuvant chemotherapy
mm-hmm.
With cisplatin and Taxotere, but I went into that with a small nodule, and after chemotherapy, it was still there, and soon there were many more.
Oh. I had Taxol, so I know what that's like. Brown fingernails.
No fun.
No fun. Well, not at all. So you had nodules. I mean, that means in your lungs or just...
Yep. No, my kind of cancer is now mm-hmm. called invasive adenocarcinoma, and I have the mucinous variant, but back then it was called mucinous BAC, or bronchio, I can never say it, alveolar carcinoma.
Oh, no wonder they changed it. What?
Yes. but they changed it, I think, because they have found that BAC at an early stage tends to stay very localized and grow very slowly and have a very good prognosis. And the type of cancer I have, it does stay confined to my lungs.
Oh, that's good.
And it doesn't grow at a super rapid pace, but it's very persistent.
Hmm.
And as you know, a cancer that grows quickly is also much more likely to respond to chemotherapy.
Yes.
And so back then, when the surgery itself didn't take care of it, the chemotherapy was something we tried, but not an effective option for me.
So radiation, what wouldn't be either?
Nope. And that's because I ended up with far too many nodules.
Oh.
The way my cancer spreads in my lungs, it's very lace-like.
Ooh.
And we took kind of a watch-and-wait approach,
mm-hmm.
and my oncologist was trying to preserve my quality of life, but also he understood that there really weren't options for me.
Right.
So, you know, there was really no choice but to do watch-and-wait. And at a certain point in time, I think it was 2 years in, I asked him, he referred to the stuff in my lungs as schmutz. And I said, so approximately how much schmutz do I have in there? And he said, approximately 33.
Ooh.
So, and I went home feeling sort of like a cancer bomb, just understanding how much was in my lungs.
Wow. And was it at that point you heard about the clinical trial, or did you... I mean, the watch and wait thing has to be very scary, you know, because you hear about other patients who go, well, let's watch and wait. And then it's like, well, how are we watching it? Because we're not doing anything.
Yeah, it's a hard time. And, you know, lung cancer is sometimes referred to as an invisible disease. And I think that's for a number of reasons, including the stigma and the lack of funding. But also, it's not a disease that is necessarily obvious unless you're quite symptomatic. And everybody in my life figured I was cured. You know, I'd had the surgery. I looked great again. You know, everything was fine. And in the meantime, I was going back for scans every 3 months, and every scan was worse than the previous one. So it was a very hard time. And by the spring of 2008, I became symptomatic again. And by late spring, quite short of breath and coughing. And at this point in time, we did a biopsy, and it was confirmed that I had metastatic spread.
Ooh.
So I was restaged to 4. And that was a surprise to me, simply because, again, operating out of ignorance, I thought it went 1, 2, 3, 4.
Right.
What about the 2 and the 3?
Why do we have to skip over those, right?
Yes. But they started me on a course of Tarceva at that point in time, even though I was EGFR negative. And that's part of my story I left out. 10 years ago, when I was diagnosed, being at a very progressive hospital, they tested me for EGFR, but I was negative for that.
What is that? So, did we talk about that? What is that?
It's a genetic mutation
okay.
that often drives cancer, and it was the one that was kind of the hot button topic 10 years ago, because it was really the only one that was being talked about that had a treatment. So, you know, my oncologist originally was quite hopeful that that would be something I could do. And I fit the profile as a young never smoker and mm-hmm. a woman. These were all 3 things that made it more likely. But we went ahead and tried it in 2008 just because there was nothing else to do. And at this time, I said to my oncologist, should I start getting my affairs in order?
Ooh.
And for the first time, my very optimistic oncologist said yes. And
Yikes.
So I asked him to refer me to a psychiatrist so that mm-hmm. I could talk to someone to help me learn how to die. And our youngest, who was just 10 at that point, also started seeing a counselor.
Oh, that's good. A lot of people probably don't think about that.
Yep.
But you're still here, so continue. I mean, that's the best part
yeah.
of the story.
Yeah, well, it was, you know, it was an amazing summer because 2 months after I started the Tarceva, I went in for a scan review, and as expected, there'd been progression. And my oncologist said, also explained to me when I went in, that when I'd had the biopsy, they had submitted genetic material for further testing, and this time I had come back positive for an ALK mutation, and this was a mutation that had just been identified as being something that could drive lung cancer.
Hmm.
So again, just being at the hospital I was at, MGH, I had access to a lot of cutting-edge information. And so my oncologist said, you have 4 choices. You can stay on the Tarceva. You could return to traditional chemotherapy. You could do nothing. Or you could potentially join this phase 1 clinical trial that targets the ALK mutation. And I ended up just leaping at that. Again,
sign
as
me
I
up.
Said earlier,
yep.
mm-hmm. options. And I knew the first 3 were a dead end. I ended up being the 4th person in the world to take this ALK inhibitor for lung cancer.
Wow.
And obviously, because I'm still speaking to you, I had an amazing response. And when I went in to see my oncologist for the next scan review, he said, this is the best scan I have seen in months. It's flipping amazing. You know, this is just unbelievable. And when he put the 2 scans side by side, the before and after, it looked like I had no more cancer in my lungs, whereas before it was like there was a blizzard inside.
Wow. So you basically paved the way for other survivors through your...
Yeah, and, you know, I'll be frank, that was not
well,
my
no,
intention.
Not your intention.
Because I had no expectations, you know?
Right.
It was just... wow, maybe this drug will extend my life for a few months. Because honestly, except for those patients who responded to the EGFR inhibitor, there was no precedence.
Wow.
But yes, I am now on my third phase one clinical trial.
Wow. How does the clinical trial work? Once it works, do you, assuming that'll work for a while, and then do you have to go on to another clinical trial?
Yes. At this point in time, clinical trials are my only option.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't say my only option. That's not true. I could return to traditional chemotherapy.
Right.
But
nobody likes Taxol. Let's just put it that way.
Right. And I did return to traditional chemotherapy before I went on this particular clinical trial. I had Alimta and carboplatin. It's always something I can do, mm-hmm. but it's something where I have never had a positive response with the carboplatin and the Alimta. I did stay stable for mm-hmm. a few months. So it very likely bought me more time. But the whole purpose was just to hold on until another clinical trial was available.
Right. Sometimes the quality of life on chemo isn't as good as not being on chemo.
Right. No, exactly. And, you know, right before I called you to be on your program today, mm-hmm. I took my medicine, my cancer medicine, which comes in tablet form.
Oh, nice.
And I thought, you know, it's something I now take for granted, but it's so remarkable.
Yes. That's awesome, not having to go to the hospital and get... I had a port when I had my breast cancer, and you just sit there for like an hour, hour and a half, and just...
Yep.
You know, and then the next day you're all out of it and feeling crappy and everything.
Yep.
You know.
This is much nicer, and
yes.
It doesn't mean that there aren't side effects.
Oh,
but,
of course.
You know, I think particularly with cancer patients living longer, quality of life really comes into play.
Yes.
And it's not just the discomfort of having to have chemotherapy, it's having to go to the hospital, having mm-hmm. to sit there, like you said, having to go home again. It's pretty lovely to be able to take tablets in your home.
Right, and then you can just, you know, binge watch something on Netflix or take a nap or walk the dog
or
something.
To you on the phone.
Talk to me on the phone. Well, you know, I mean, of course. But I mean, hanging out with your children and being at home is obviously the most important thing. Now, tell me about your art, because we had talked a little bit about that. I'm looking at an everydayhealth.com article about you, that you're an artist.
Yes, and it's obviously with my life the last 10 years, there have been a lot of up and downs.
Right.
Physically, so sometimes I'm able to do art, sometimes I'm not. And right now I'm in a period of time that I'm particularly excited about, because as I mentioned to you before I started the phone call, mm-hmm. it's a change of life for me. I've just gone through a divorce, and I'm living in a converted mill in Lowell, Mass. That is artistic community. There's 50 units here, and everybody in the building does some sort of creative venture.
That's sweet.
And so after all these years of being a mom, you mm-hmm. know, and my primary job being caretaking, it's pretty remarkable to feel almost like I've gone back to school, and I can really immerse myself in my art and my creative pursuits again.
So what is your favorite form of art that you do? Or do you do, mixed media photography? I don't see anything online. Is there anything online that I can look at?
There are a few things that mm-hmm. I have posted on my blog.
Mm-hmm.
I just started painting again last week. I hadn't painted for probably a year and a half.
Oh.
And it feels very exciting to start that again. Painting is certainly one of my favorites, but I do a lot of photography.
Nice.
I'm beginning to get into mixed media. In
mm-hmm.
fact, this morning I was working with some materials. One of my neighbors here in the lofts works in a floral shop, and she's been bringing me the rose petals that fall off the flowers, and I've been sorting them by color, and I have a project in mind for those. So I'm working with fresh materials,
wow.
You know, new things that I really hadn't considered before.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And that's got to be very cathartic. Because, like, writing is cathartic for me. I take pictures as well. Just getting out there and doing that, I'm sure, obviously takes your mind off the cancer. And then, you know, hopefully you post it on your website and other people see it and be like, oh, yeah, you know, maybe they have thought that they couldn't do something while they're going through treatment or, like you said, at stage four. But here you are making art, which is something beautiful that everyone can share.
Yeah. And, you know, I can honestly say, and this is hard for some people probably to imagine if they're early in this journey, but I never thought I would live 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly didn't think I would live this long after I became stage four. But I have lived almost lifetimes again, you know, and I feel like I'm starting a new one now. And my cancer, obviously, I think about it every day. It's not something that ever goes away. But it doesn't frighten me like it used to. And I no longer have scanxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And there are so many things about my life that have actually improved for the positive.
I agree.
Much less afraid of things than I was before I had cancer.
Well, I think it's
part of that is just knowing I can live through a lot of hard stuff.
Exactly. And I think that's why a lot of people have bucket lists. And I hate that term, but bucket lists and lists of things that they want to do because it's like, well, I beat cancer. Why can't I try this? It doesn't necessarily have to be skydiving or anything like that. And,
yeah,
you know, because we're used to going through, you know, the hardships and the surgeries and just having the big what ifs over our heads. It's like, oh, well, why don't I try this? You know, even if you make a fool of yourself, like, if I tried to paint something and make it look like something besides like a weird Jackson Pollock / Picasso thing, you know, the horse I try to paint isn't going to look like a horse, but at least I tried it and like, there you go.
No, that's a lovely sentiment because when you have been at a place where what's the worst that can happen is that you're going to die, you know, so
right. It
just means in a way that it's strangely freeing.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. I mean, I have a second job as a barista and people are like, well, you know, you must be happy because your day's almost over. It's like, well, I'm happy every day. It doesn't have to be because it's, and you know, I'm almost punched out of the,
isn't
you know,
that part
at work.
Amazing?
It is.
My mom used to say to me, because she'd worry, she'd say, well, what do you do for fun? And I'd say, Mom, everything I do is for fun.
Exactly. Exactly. And people who haven't been through, you know, cancer or other forms of diseases just don't understand that. And I wish people could understand that without going through any kind of...
Oh, I do too,
you know.
Because I wouldn't wish this on anybody, but it does give you this incredible fresh perspective.
It sure
and
does.
I wake up every single morning just grateful that I'm alive for another day.
Well, I'm grateful we had this time to talk. Now, it's almost been a half hour, so if people want to get
it
a hold
flew.
Of you... It did fly by. That's crazy. And if people want to get a hold of you, where can they do so?
I have a blog,
mm-hmm.
and it's something that's been a little quiet the last year, but
that's all right.
Within a day or two, it's going to be up and running again.
Excellent.
And they can find me there at www.outlivinglungcancer.com.
Excellent. Are you
could
on?
Also find me mm-hmm. by Googling my name, Linnea Duff, and Lung Cancer Blog.
Awesome. And are you on Facebook or Twitter?
Yes, I am. And if you want to find me on Facebook, I'm transitioning back to my maiden name. It'll be official and legal September 1st, but
okay. It's
Linnea Olson, O-L-S-O-N. And I'm embarrassed, but I don't even know what my handle or whatever you call it is on
Twitter.
On Twitter.
That's okay. It's only 140 characters. We'll figure it out. They can find you via the blog or Facebook. And definitely the blog. We're interested in seeing your latest post and more art that you'll be creating.
All right. Great.
All right. Well, hang on, Linnea. I'm going to wrap up like I usually do. This is Mel Majoros. I am the Cancer Warrior. You can always find me on Facebook because I am a Facebook junkie, Mel Majoros. Check out my blog, thecancerwarrior.blogspot.com, and my website, thecancerwarrior.net. And as always, life looks pretty good from where I'm sitting. Sending you good vibes. It's The Cancer Warrior on empowerradio.com.